It's our pleasure to at this time continue our study in the book of Genesis. In our last lesson, we'd gotten into the 14th chapter of Genesis and I'd read the first four verses. I'd like to again read those first four verses, beginning with Genesis 14, verse 1. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Eleazar, Shedolamer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Sinab, king of Admah, Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. All these were joined together in the Vale of Siddim, which is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. Here we read about a confederacy of four kings from the Babylonia area who are going to make war with five kings who are by the Salt Sea. And these four kings from Babylonia, they represent the nations of Shinar, which was Babylonia, Eleazar, which is the leading tribe in southern Babylonia, Elam, the original kingdom of Persia, and Jeoim, translated as nations, but probably a tribe of northeastern Babylonia. At this time, in all probability, the kings were small, not much larger than maybe city-states. So these invading armies were not as formidable as those which invaded Canaan in later times. Yet they were fierce and cruel and could have completely destroyed all the inhabitants of Canaan. Archaeology has shown that such invasions were common throughout the Middle East, as each tribe sought to obtain for itself the most desirable lands and mineral deposits. This particular invasion was evidently motivated by the rich metal deposits of the region. Chedorlaomer was recognized as the leader of the group. At one time, the scholars thought this whole story to be just a fable. This was because it was so difficult to identify the kings and because they did not follow the usual trade routes of the day. But in recent years, further exploration has confirmed the authenticity of the Bible record. The leading Palestinian archaeologist of modern times, a man by the name of Dr. Nelson Gluck, has said, quote, "Centuries earlier, another civilization had flourished between the 21st and 19th centuries B.C. till it was savagely liquidated by the kings of the East. According to the biblical statements, which have been borne out by archaeological evidence, they gutted every city and village at the end of that period from Ashtaroth, Karnaim, in southern Syria, through all of Transjordan and the Negev to Kadesh Barnea in Sinai." This quotation is from a book written by Dr. Nelson Gluck entitled Rivers in the Desert, page 11, written in 1959. According to the Bible, this confederacy of kings had come earlier into the region and had placed the local kings in Abram's region under tribute. This area was forced to pay tribute to the kings of this confederacy. The oppressed area included the five cities of the Jordanian plain in the southern Dead Sea area. They were Sodom, Gomorrah, Adnah, Zeboim, and Zoar. Verse 3 says, "All these were joined together in the Vale of Siddim, which is the Salt Sea." This area is called the Vale of Siddim, meaning fields, probably because of the high fertility and extensive agriculture at the time. Moses may have added the explanation, which is the Salt Sea, for later readers. It is possible that the Salt Sea was not originally salty when it first began to fill up after the post-flood earth upheavals. It only became known as the Dead Sea in the 2nd century A.D. and was sometimes called the Asphalt Sea by early writers. But after centuries of salt-carrying tributary and Jordan River inflows, combined with evaporation as the only outlet, it gradually became salty. Verse 10 states, "And the Vale of Siddim was full of slime pits." This was a rich source of asphalt or of some other bituminous material. This may have been one of the attractions the invading kings had for the area. So in verse 4 of Genesis 14, 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. After the cities of the plain had been under tribute for 12 years, in the 13th year they rebelled. This is the first time the Bible mentions the number 13. We note that it is associated with rebellion, as it often seems to be throughout the rest of the scripture. So now, continuing our narrative, Genesis 14, verses 5 through 12. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him, and smote the Rephaims and Ashtaroth-Kernaim, and the Zuzims and Ham, and the Emims and Shalva-Kerathaim, and the Horites in their Mount Seir, unto Ephraim, which is by the wilderness. And they returned and came to Enmishpat, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites, that dwelt in Hazeron Tamar. And there went out the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Admah, and the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, the same as Zoar, and they joined battle with them in the vale of Siddim, with Chedorlaomer, the king of Elam, with Tidal, king of nations, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elsar, four kings with five. And the vale of Siddim was full of slime pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and fell there, and they that remained fled to the mountain. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah, and all their victuals, and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. When the cities of the plain of Jordan rebelled and stopped paying tribute, this caused the destructive invasion led by Chedorlaomer. It seems that they not only invaded the Jordanian cities, but set about to destroy all others in that region. Again, we want to quote from Dr. Nelson Gluck's book, Rivers in the Desert, page 72 and 73. The rebellion of the small kings on the east side of the Dead Sea against what must have been the extortionate rule of absentee Sergians was brutally crushed. This comparatively minor insurrection was thereupon utilized as a pretext to settle old scores and to raid and ravage with unleashed ferocity for as much booty as could possibly be won. An old order was crumbling. From southern Syria to central Sinai, their fury raged. A punitive expedition developed into an orgy of annihilation. I found that every village in their path had been plundered and left in ruins, and the countryside laid waste. The population had been wiped out or led away into captivity. For hundreds of years thereafter, the entire area was like an abandoned cemetery, hideously unkempt, with all its monuments shattered and strewn in pieces on the ground. End of quote. This is a description of the invasion given by the leading Palestinian archaeologist of modern times, and it gives us an idea of what happened during this invasion by the kings led by Chedorlaomer. In a few verses, the Bible tells of a time of great unrest and war. The invasion by the northeastern kings first defeated all of the tribes north, east, and then south of the Salt Sea. Before it reached the five cities on the southern shore of the Salt Sea, against which the invasion had been planned in the first place. The purpose of the first battles with the tribes north, east, and south was probably to eliminate the possibility of being attacked from the rear, while they were occupied with the five kings on the southeast shore of the Salt Sea. Some of the tribes and places mentioned here are interesting, but not all have been archaeologically identified. The Rephaim were located in Ashtaroth-Kernaim, the Zuzim were located in Ham, and the Emim were located in Shava. The Zuzim are probably the same as the Zamzumim, mentioned in Deuteronomy 2, verses 20 and 21. There it says, a land of giants, giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites called them Zamzumims, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims. The Emims had the same description, Deuteronomy 2 and 10. There it says, the Emims dwelt therein time past, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims. Rephaim meant the strong ones, Emim meant the terrible ones, and Zamzumim meant the powerful ones. At the time of the invasion described in this 14th chapter of Genesis, there were evidently a number of these ungodly tribes living in Canaan. Some way or another, Abram managed to coexist with them in peace. It seemed that these heathen tribes were scattered throughout the land of Canaan, rather than all living in one place. The fact that the invading kings could defeat them gives some indication that the armies from the east were greater in number and strength. The kings encountered The Rephaim at Ashtaroth Karnaim, which the archaeologists have discovered to be two sites. One was Tel Ashtaroth, and the other site was called Karnaim in New Testament times. The name Ashtaroth comes from the moon goddess Astarte in the Greek, equivalent to the Babylonian Ishtar and the Canaanite Ashtaroth. The goddess of sensual love, whose worship was one of the causes of the prevalent immorality of the Canaanites. After defeating the Rephaim, Zuzim, and Emim, Chedorlaomer attacked the Horites in Mount Seir on the south side of the Salt Sea. These are known to archaeologists as one of the leading tribes of the Middle East in ancient times, and they populated Mount Seir, which later became the country of the Edomites, according to Deuteronomy 2:22 and Genesis 36:20. From Mount Seir, the kings went to El Paran in the southern wilderness, and from there to Kadesh on the southern western side of the Salt Sea, where they smote the inhabitants of the region that would later belong to the Amalekites. Amalek was a grandson of Esau. They also defeated a portion of the Amorites, who were probably the dominant tribe in Canaan at that time. The Amorite was a son of Canaan, the grandson of Noah. After thus defeating all who might stand in their way, the Eastern Confederacy turned its full attention to the rebellious kings of the south. As the kings of the east met the kings of the south, verse 8 says, and they joined battle with them in the Vale of Siddim. Verse 9 names the eastern kings again and says, four kings with five. That is, four kings from the east against the five kings from the south. The eastern kings are named in verse 1. In this battle of Siddim, the southern kings were decisively defeated. Verse 10 says, and the Vale of Siddim was full of slime pits. And the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there. And they that remained fled to the mountain. The kings of the south lost the battle decisively. Verse 11, and they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. Chedorlaomer's army gathered up all the possessions of the defeated cities, including the women, children, and servants, as well as many captured soldiers, and headed north again. Verse 12 states, and they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. Unfortunately for them, they also took Lot and his family captive as well. Lot was living in Sodom proper at this time. In spite of his carnality, 2 Peter 2:8 refers to him as that righteous man. He was also the nephew of Abram, who had received God's call, so God would not allow Lot to be carried off by Chedorlaomer. Now, reading in verses 13 through 16 of this 14th chapter of Genesis. And there came one that had escaped, and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, and brother of Aner, and these were confederate with Abram. When Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them, and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot, and his goods, and the women also, and the people. Although the archaeologists' discoveries reveal that the invading armies destroyed the cities they conquered, many of the inhabitants apparently escaped and fled, later settling in new locations. One of those that escaped, probably an Amorite, came to warn those of his tribe who were living near Abram by the grove of Mamre. Mamre and his brothers, Eshcol and Aner, were confederate with Abram, according to verse 13. Verse 13 makes the first mention of the name Hebrew, applying it to Abram. Most scholars assume that this name comes from the name of Eber, great-grandson of Shem, and a distant relative of Abram. The term Hebrew, H-A-B-I-R-U, has been applied to other tribes besides the children of Israel, and the name seems to suggest any moving tribe, as of course the Israelites were for 40 years after they left Egypt. Even so, it still might refer to Eber, since his son, Joktan, seems to have had many tribes in Arabia descend from him. And Abram himself had many other nomadic descendants besides the Israelites. But the term Hebrew, as applied to Abram, has also been translated by others as the man from beyond the river, speaking of the Euphrates. It is possible that both interpretations have some truth in them. Abram did come from beyond the river, and his was a moving tribe. But the important thing is that this first mention here is to clearly distinguish Abram from the other inhabitants of Canaan. Even though Abram had economic and political connections with some of them, when he's called the Hebrew, that distinguishes him from the others. Abraham, by this time, was a man of some significant power, at least a tribal chief, and possibly as much authority as some of the kings of the day. For among those he held authority over, he was able to gather 318 men who had been trained in his own household to pursue the kings and to rescue Lot. It is also possible that some of the Amorites went with him. But regardless of the strength of his small army, they were in no way a match for those invading armies who had already defeated many armies, which were much larger than the group following Abram. Much like Gideon and his 300 men defeated the Midianites, 135,000 men, in Judges 8, 4, and 10. But God was with Abram and his men, just as he was with Gideon, and that is all that is required. God was with them. That was the difference. In all probability, the victorious armies of the kings, as they were returning after their conquest, were enjoying the spoils of war and relaxing after their battles, and they would have no thought of a sudden nighttime attack. But Abram attacked them from different directions at once, suddenly, causing them to be caught off guard and confused, and they became very vulnerable. They fled, but Abram pursued them all the way to north of Damascus, recapturing Lot. Verse 16 says, "And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot, and his goods, and the women also, and the people." This victory clearly came from the Lord. God has the power to protect his people, and can use whatever means are necessary to do so. This is as true today as it was in Abram's day. Now, beginning in the 17th verse and through verse 24, we'd like to read that passage, and we're going to have the character of Melchizedek introduced here. "And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, and of the kings that were with him, at the valley of Shaveh, which is the king's dale. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand. And he gave him tithes of all. And the king of Sodom said unto Abram, Give me the persons, and take the goods to thyself. But Abram said unto the king of Sodom, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abram rich, save only that which the young men have eaten, and the portion of the men which went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portion." In this passage, we have one of the most fascinating stories in the Bible. This passage tells about Abram's meeting with Melchizedek, king of Salem, and priest of the Most High God. This intriguing person is referred to 900 years later by King David in Psalm 110, verse 4. He's referred to 1900 years later by the writer of the book of Hebrews in Hebrews chapter 5, verses 6 and 10, chapter 6, verses 20, and chapter 7, verses 1 through 21, where he is mentioned by name at least 9 times. We are plainly told that this man Melchizedek is a type of Christ. The passage in Hebrews gives many similarities between the two, showing that Melchizedek was a type of Christ. And besides this great truth, there are many other things recorded about Melchizedek. His name means King of Righteousness, according to Hebrews 7, verse 2. And his title, King of Sodom, means King of Peace. For an individual to have such a name in such a place as Canaan, which was filled with wickedness, violence, and idolatry, was very remarkable. But our information about him shows that the name was appropriate. He is the first priest mentioned in the Bible, and this is also the first mention of the word peace, or Salem. He obviously had a unique relationship to the true God, not like the other idolatrous paganistic kings of that region with their multiple gods. He used the name Most High God, El Elyon, to stress the absolute superiority of God to the multitude of gods and goddesses worshipped in Canaan. He also identifies God as the possessor of heaven and earth, referring to the creation in Genesis 1. Abram recognized Melchizedek as representing the same God who had called him to Canaan, the same God who had just given Abram the victory over the kings, the same God who had given Abram the great promises. So Abram gave him tithes of all, and Melchizedek brought forth bread and wine, which I believe to be for ceremonial purposes, as a thank offering to God. This is the first mention of tithes in the Bible. This is the first mention of bread and wine used in ceremonial service to God. The bread and wine are very likely types of the Lord's Supper, which we today partake of on the first day of the week, according to Acts 20, verse 7. We are instructed to lay by in store as God has prospered him, also on the first day of the week, in 1 Corinthians 16 and 2. We are giving to the same priesthood that Abraham gave to, and Abraham gave not less than 10%. And as we study about Melchizedek, we have many hard-to-answer questions, and some questions we have no answer for. This brings our lesson to a close. In our next lesson, we intend to further study about Melchizedek and some of the mysteries that surround him. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.